Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to the second hour of Upstate Outdoors here on 106.3 WORD. Had a great first hour. Talked to our buddy Tom Money from Fish Stalker Lures. Of course, we led off talking about basically your rights as a hunter and fisherman. And after the Roadkill Cafe this hour, we're going to be talking to U.S. Congressman Jeff Duncan. He's from District 3 in South Carolina. That's, what is that, Lawrence, Anderson, everywhere pretty much just south of here.
True.
And so we'll be talking to Congressman Duncan, who basically is fighting the fight on your behalf for a lot of outdoor causes there. He's got the SHARE Act that he's heavily involved in there through the Natural Resources Committee. Also, he's involved in the restoring, let's see, the RAWA Act. We talked about that on the show a couple of weeks ago, maybe a little bit longer than that. And also a member of the Sportsman's Caucus. Yeah. And we'll be talking with him about all of those and all the good work that he's doing there. And then we will, at the end of the show, we'll wrap up with our calendar of events. And then we'll do some more talking about a support squirrel. So I always go out on a high note or a low note, depending
on how you want to look at it.
But we always start the second hour on a cooking note.
I'm cooking up dead stuff. Okay, here we go. Deer season officially is now.
Woo, boy, and, I'm going to tell you what.
My mind is officially here.
Well, and I think a lot of folks, too, you don't realize who's out in the woods during bow season because you don't hear them.
Bingo. I bet you were hearing it today.
And then somewhat, you know, during muzzleloader season, you hear that. Woof.
Okay.
Man.
This morning sounded like a war.
Well, not so much this morning, but yesterday. I think the deer moved better yesterday afternoon than they did this morning. Doesn't mean I didn't hear, you know, some gunshots here and there. But down in Union County, man, it was boom, 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 boom.
Them boys know how to get it done down there.
If you like Facebook page of any deer processor taxidermist,
right,
they will load your feed up.
Yes, sir.
With make you feel bad.
Yeah, they do. All right, what we're going to do this week is some venison, chop steak, and gravy. Yeah, we're going old school. We need 2 teaspoons of dried beef onion soup mix, or just buy it in the packet. Doesn't matter. 1/4 cup of a beer and 1 pound of ground venison, or you could go ahead and have your cube steaks and use those. 1 teaspoon of Worcestershire sauce, salt and pepper to taste, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, and 2 tablespoons, give or take, of flour. That's how you're going to make your gravy. All right, you're going to microwave the onion soup mix in the 1/4 cup of beer and until the onions are tender. Smells great in the microwave once you open that up, once it's heated up, by the way. And then add to the venison with your Worcestershire sauce, salt, and pepper. All right, and then you're going to form your patties if you're not using a cube steak. And place in the olive oil in a nonstick pan. I like the old school iron skillet. And add the patties and cook until they're done, about 6 to 8 minutes, okay? Depending. Just make sure you check them. And then you're going to remove them from the pan, and then here's where the magic starts. Here's where you start making gravy, baby. You make your roux, baby. You add your flour, and you start that stirring thing, and you stir constantly. It's almost like an art. For about a minute, add about 1 cup of water, and, you know, that's not a surefire amount. You just watch the flour. And if you like thick gravy, you go less on the water. If you like thinner gravy, you go a little more. All right, and until it's nice and smooth and thick is the way I like it. All right, and then what I do then is I take my patties and I put it back in this, and then I cover it for a little bit and let it simmer for about 10 to 15 minutes, and all that gravy and all that goodies is cooking into those patties, and I serve with rice. So there you go. Old school, simple, and effective.
Awesome. Sounds delicious.
Yeah. You was cooking some fine meals this week, too.
And
getting to be quite the man with the cooking nail going on there at the Gentry House.
Well, we had a couple of opportunities. We had some finally cooked white perch. People have been telling me that I need
to start
eating white perch instead of feeding them to the dog or sticking a knife in them and throwing them back in the lake.
Right.
Which I've done that for years.
Years.
Yeah.
Jack, how many white perch has Jack eat in his time?
Yeah, that's why the vet bill.
Yeah.
But
anyway,
we flayed some white perch and we had bait fish tacos.
Awesome,
and they were pretty good. And then one of Boat Girl's customers had been down to the Keys, and lobster season was going on down there, so they brought her some lobster tails, and we had those in the freezer. And one thing about lobster tails is they don't have a long freezer life.
No.
And I kept saying, man, we need to cook them. And so basically just grilled them. I didn't grill them long enough. I usually, you know, would fish and all that. I don't know. She was right.
Lobster tails are tricky, though,
well,
man.
Is it
the spiny lobsters?
Yeah, Florida lobster.
Yeah. They're tricky.
And when you cut them and then you extrude the meat and then you grill them. And the one that I got extruded good, you know, like they do in a restaurant where you cut it down the side and then pop it out of the shell and it's still attached, so to speak. That one did better. But two of them, they kind of sucked back down in the shell while I was grilling them, and I didn't get them done. And it's kind of funny. Lobster's one of those things that where the more you cook it, the more tender that it gets. And if you leave it, you know, kind of on the rare side, it stays kind of stringy.
Yes, it does. So, you're so right, my friend.
Well, just don't have a lot of experience with that.
Well, who does? You know, and, it's not like we get to cook that all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Crawdads out of the creek. I should have just thrown them in the pot and boiled them, right?
I was going to say, you know, the one thing you could have done is throw them in the pot with some crab boil and been done with it.
And the thing that I did learn about lobster is the side dishes that you serve with them.
Right.
You don't want anything intricate.
Okay.
As a side dish with lobster, because the lobster itself is so rich.
Oh, it's rich.
I mean, we did a pretty simple coleslaw.
Right.
And I think maybe we probably made some instant mashed potatoes. Some bread. And that was pretty good. But, you know, you put all the time into the lobster.
Right. White perch was awesome, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Missed out on a lot of good meals.
Well, there's plenty more where that came from.
That's good stuff. That's a good segment there.
We've been catching some good ones.
Right.
We've been going down to Lake Greenwood the last couple of Sundays, and we've been catching some really good ones.
Yeah.
And I hated to.
What they feeding on, man?
Huh?
What y'all catching them on?
Crankbaits.
Trolling crankbaits.
I actually did an article in Carolina Sportsman a couple of months ago, and that pattern's still going on. It's probably gone now. But where we're trolling crankbaits, and then it got a three-way swivel with a jig trailing behind it, so you got two baits on each line.
Wow.
And
two at a time.
Yeah. Well, we didn't catch any two at a time. But,
oh, really?
And pretty much that's going to catch about anything.
Right.
You're trolling a crankbait, the bigger fish going to hit that. I mean, we've caught catfish, we've caught bass, we've caught white perch, we've caught crappie, largemouth bass, did I say that, and spotted bass.
Right. You've got that trolling concept down pat, don't you?
Yeah, I can't cast.
you just like to troll.
That's what that boils down to. I can't cast. It's like working on a shrimp boat. I can't even cast no more. Just put the rods out and let's go.
Oh, my God. That's good stuff, though, PG.
Let's go to our break. When we come back, we'll ring up U.S. Congressman Jeff Duncan and talk with him, maybe even keep him on for a couple of segments.
Right here, Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD, the Upstate's talk station. Stay tuned. We're going to come back, talk to Congressman Jeff Duncan. Looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back. Upstate Outdoors is on your radio, and we've got a great opportunity here. We're talking to U.S. Congressman Jeff Duncan from District 3, South Carolina. Congressman, welcome to Upstate Outdoors.
Well, thanks for having me on. What a great opportunity for me to be on with you guys, and hopefully you've enjoyed some time in the woods since deer season opened on Thursday.
Philip has. I hadn't yet, Congressman. And let me ask you this. This is Tommy Springer. Are you a fan of the show?
I am a big fan of the show. Unfortunately, I don't get to listen to it a lot. But,
yes, sir.
Great fan.
Okay, well, appreciate it.
This is where we plug our podcast. If you go to 1063WRD.radio.com, you can listen from anywhere, even from Washington, D.C., and probably wouldn't be a bad idea at some times.
Yeah, I can tell you that I can probably name a bunch of people that need to listen to Common Sense, Outdoor, Hunting, Fishing, Americana. And there are a lot of them in the swamp up there in D.C. But I'm glad to be back in South Carolina today, guys. I am at the Gun and Knife Show over at the TD Center here in Greenville. Looking at some ammo, looking at a new scope for a rifle. I'm doing a lot of long-range shooting now. And just really enjoying exercising my Second Amendment rights, too.
There you go. And, you know, speaking of which, Congressman, you are a member of the Congressional Sportsman's Caucus. And, you know, you hear a lot of stuff about, well, you know, Democrats and Republicans just absolutely cannot get along on any issue whatsoever. But probably one of the bright spots there is looking at the Sportsman's Caucus, because it is definitely a bipartisan caucus and probably one of the largest and most effective of any of the caucuses.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And I'm not just a member. I'm actually the chairman this year, have been in this Congress for almost the last 2 years. I'll end that term as chairman in January, but it's one of the first caucuses I joined because that is the voice for the outdoorsmen on Capitol Hill. They're advocating for legislation that gives us right to public-owned property for hunting and fishing and public access. They're supporting the shooting sports. They're supporting trapping and all the things that, if you think about outdoorsmen, that's what the Sportsman's Caucus and the Congressional Sportsman's Foundation supports. I've been involved, Tommy, with this since I was in the state legislature when I was chairman of the Sportsman's Caucus down in Columbia in the General Assembly. I was a member of that from the time it was formed, Representative Mike Pitts, and I helped form that back probably in 2003.
And let me ask you this, Congressman, when there's a lot of pressure and really needs to be about trying to work together, because, you know, it's gotten to where it's just basically polarized. One side just absolutely will not agree with the other side. But when you can get together in a caucus like this, there's a lot of benefit to being able to come to terms.
Absolutely. And these issues really transcend party lines. If you look at the makeup of the Congressional Sportsman's Caucus, it is Democrat and Republican, the largest bipartisan caucus in Congress. And, you know, we work together, the SHARE Act, which is the Sportsman Hunting and Recreation Enhancement Act, which hopefully we could get to the floor before the end of this Congress. But it had a lot of, you know, common sense legislation in there about, you know, transporting of bow and arrows and archery equipment across federal lands, about target shooting on federal lands, and it's a federal bill, so it's only dealing with those federal aspects. We had the Hearing Protection Act in there, actually got it through committee with HPA in there to allow common sense sale of suppressors so that we as outdoorsmen and hunters and people that participate in the active shooting sports can protect our hearing and shoot suppressed. You know, a lot of pushback on the suppressor part of it, but the only place a suppressor or a silencer is actually silent is a Hollywood soundstage. Everywhere else, it is just reducing that noise to where one gunshot won't damage your hearing permanently.
Amen.
And if you're looking at the SHARE Act, and you're the lead sponsor of that, it's more than that. I mean, we've got a number of tenants in that, ranging from fishing protection all the way down, like you said, to suppressors.
Yeah, it deals with red snapper and seasons and you know, it's completely comprehensive in that it's the sportsman heritage and recreation enhancement, just to enhance our access to public property and our ability to enjoy what we do as outdoors men and women.
And you know, one of the things that we're looking at the Target Practice and Marksmanship Training Support Act, which is increases the state's authority to allocate the Pittman-Robertson Act. And a lot of folks maybe don't realize what the funding from the Pittman-Robertson Act does for sportsmen, especially in the shooting ranges.
Yeah, and it's not it's a fee paid on ammunition sales and firearm sales, mainly ammunition, with Pittman-Robertson that goes to enhance public lands and our ability to have access to that. Conservation efforts. So, you know, Pittman-Robertson has been around since like the 1930s, and it was a way for the hunters and fishermen to be able to put money back into the resource so that as a conservation effort, so that that resource will always be there for you.
And Congressman, let me ask you, this is something that we talk about a lot, especially when we get Springer wound up talking about the Gulf fisheries when you're talking about the red snapper closures. We've seen a lot of that. We've also seen some of the here on the East Coast. We've seen closures for cobia fishing. A lot of folks place a lot of blame on NOAA, saying, well, the data's not accurate. Or you know, maybe they're going to the same spots. What's your take on what needs to be done with that?
Well, here's what happens: is you have two guys in a lab coat, so to speak, in a cubicle in Washington, looking at these 50-year computer models, trying to figure out how many fish should be out in the Gulf or in the Atlantic, and determining what the closures should be, or whether you can catch certain slot limits or whatnot on snapper on black sea bass, on cobia, and they're not using or utilizing the actual data that they may pick up if they go and talk to the headboat captains or talk to the charter captains or talk to the actual fishermen that are coming back from the reefs in the Gulf or off the coast of South Carolina fishing for cobia or sea bass and really finding out what they're finding out there. And I can tell you with red snapper, the computer models have been wrong. And we've been able to work in Congress to get that changed and give the states a little more authority in their red snapper season, actually working out the benefit of the sports fishermen.
And I agree with you. That's probably the best assessment of what's going on with the snapper regulations that I've heard. And coming from a congressman, it makes Springer really happy. I tell you, I think if they went to that and left it to the states in more of a power, I think it would really help out Congressman Duncan.
Well, there's no doubt about it. And I work with folks in Georgia, of course, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, and Louisiana on the red snapper issue. And those guys are more knowledgeable than anyone over at NOAA or even the Fish and Wildlife Service with regard to how many fish are actually out there. And the Steve Sutherland, a good friend of mine from Panama City, Florida, who is struggling right now due to the hurricane damage, when he was in Congress in 2011, 2012, he worked very hard on the red snapper issue. And what you end up having, and a lot of folks don't know this, is you have a thing called catch shares, where the commercial fishery people that are going out there on the commercial side are given certain credits that sort of like cap and trade for fishing, where those credits can be sold. And there are a couple of big commercial fishermen out there that have the bulk of those credits, and they dominate the number of red snapper and other fish that can be caught. And it's just wrong. Cap and trade was wrong for the environment. And restricting our utility companies, and cap and trade scheme of catch shares is wrong for the fisheries.
Amen, Congressman Duncan.
And when you're looking at the studies on it, and I understand what you're saying about the cap and trade, but they come back with the science. If you look at that from a state level, the biologists that are trying to do these stock assessments will say, okay, we've done so much research of our own, but then they do Creel surveys. And I really don't think that a lot of Creel surveys are doing, like you said, with captains and anglers saying, hey, what are you seeing out there? What's your real experience in that? They're simply doing, like you said, what the 50-year statistical data models say, and then, okay, that's all we got.
Yeah, and it's been proven over and again that the computer model and the actual real data that you're getting from the ocean itself are oftentimes, and there's a dichotomy there between what the computer says should be out there and what is actually out there. The health of the ocean, and especially around the reefs, are much healthier and the fisheries are much better than what the computer models are showing. But yet the guys in lab coat that are pushing down those regulations, they're not getting the real-time data. And that's one thing we've advocated for in Congress is, you know, look, go out there and talk to the fishermen. Go out there and talk to the captains that are taking people offshore, the headboats that are going out to these reefs, and finding out what they're bringing up. Find out how many they're catching. And I believe they'll find that the two data sets are going to be different.
Absolutely.
And in touching on this, we're talking with U.S. Congressman Jeff Duncan. We're reviewing the SHARE Act here. And they're just your lead sponsor of that. There's a lot of really great stuff in here. If you go to the press release, you can go to jeffduncan.house.gov and look that up and just see a lot of the great stuff in here. You had touched on talking about the Hearing Protection Act, which basically revolves around suppressors. And what are the challenges there? Like you said, part of it is a mentality that it's a silent assault weapon.
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, the only place a suppressor is actually silent is on a Hollywood soundstage. The facts are that for just about every firearm that is suppressed, the sound coming out of that barrel is as loud as a jackhammer. And no one would say that a jackhammer is silent.
Yeah.
So what it does is it suppresses that noise coming out from that shotgun or that rifle blast or even a handgun to the level that it one shot won't damage your hearing. And you should always still wear hearing protection, even shooting suppressed firearms. But you're not going to damage your hearing with just one shot. And so if you go back to the National Firearms Act, which was during Prohibition and the time that they were trying to regulate machine guns falling in the hands and the automatic weapons falling in the hands of the criminals, those in the gangs and the mobs and whatnot. They included suppressors in that, but it was actually the game wardens that were pushing for suppressors to be regulated because even that muffled sound made it difficult for the game wardens to find the market hunters that were out there slaughtering our waterfowl. And poaching game, they wanted to be able to hear it. So actually the push for suppressors to be regulated in the NFA actually came from game wardens, ironic. But they have been part of the National Firearms Act as a Class 3 regulated item ever since the National Firearms Act was passed. But if you compare that with Europe, and we know Europe has very restrictive gun ownership rights, but suppressors are sold just like an accessory, just like you buy a rifle scope or a sling or a magazine or whatnot over the counter at the local hardware store. In fact, they encourage shooters in Europe to shoot suppressed because of the density of the population in Europe. It's just gentlemanly to suppress that sound. And so you can buy these items in Europe over the counter without any license, without any fee, without having to go through any background check. You just buy it like you would a scope or a sling.
And we're talking with U.S. Congressman Jeff Duncan, and we're discussing the tenets of the SHARE, the Sportsman Heritage and Recreation Enhancement Act. Congressman, we want to talk with you about this a little bit more, but we got to go to the break, so we're going to carry you over, and we'll be right back on the next side talking with U.S. Congressman Jeff Duncan.
It's Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD, the Upstate's talk station. Well, we talk to everybody, regular folks and congressmen as well. Stay tuned.
Welcome back. Upstate Outdoors is on the radio, and we've been talking to U.S. Congressman Jeff Duncan. Springer said during the break, he goes, man, I can't believe I just put a U.S. congressman on hold. I said, Springer, you can hang up on him if you want to, but I don't think he's going to talk to us again if you do that. So, Congressman Duncan, we've been talking about the SHARE Act during the last segment, and a lot of good stuff. What is the prognosis as far as getting this this passed through the legislature?
Well, first off, let me just remind your listeners that I practice what I preach, and I'm an avid outdoorsman. I hunt, I fish, I deer hunted yesterday evening. I'm at the Gun and Knife Show here in Greenville, looking at things that will make me a better outdoorsman, a better hunter and fisherman. And the only other politician here is Tommy Smith, running for sheriff in Greenville. But if a politician really believes in their Second Amendment and our right to keep and bear arms, this is a great place to come and mingle with like-minded folks. But so getting back to the SHARE Act, guys, what happened because of the Hearing Protection Act, the suppressor part of that legislation, after the Las Vegas shooting last summer a year ago, leadership got a little bit weak-kneed about bringing that bill to the floor, unfortunately, because of all the misinformation put out there by Hillary Clinton and some senators over there that were misinformed. And so what we did is we put a suppressor demonstration together in a shooting range for the Capitol Hill Police there on Capitol Hill under one of the buildings, invited Ms. Gillibrand and some of the other senators that had run their mouth on Twitter about things they had no knowledge about. We invited them to come and shoot suppressed firearms of all sorts. Not a one showed up. The only ones that showed up were people that were already familiar with it. And so if politicians aren't willing to try to educate themselves about Second Amendment issues, gun ownership, firearms in general, suppressors and whatnot, then they're going to make ill-informed or poor decisions. And so the leadership's the same way. Kevin McCarthy, who is our majority leader, I saw a picture of him shooting with Kimberly Guilfoyle and Donald Trump Jr. in Montana this week on Instagram. And I copied that picture and sent it to him. And I said, I didn't know you shot, Kevin. And he sent me some pictures back of some African game that he had killed on a high fence area in Texas. And ironically, he was shooting a rifle that was suppressed. And so I sent the picture back to him, and I said, I notice you're shooting suppressed. How about help me bring the Hearing Protection Act to the floor so that all hunters and people that enjoy the shooting sports can shoot suppressed as well? And I haven't heard back from him. So it comes down to just trying to do what's right for the American sports shooters.
And in a lot of there's a lot of legislature out there. And another one that you are a co-sponsor of that kind of came out. Actually, I think this started in the Senate. But the House has the Congress has got a companion bill, is the Recovering America's Wildlife Act. And I know you're maybe not as involved in that as you are the SHARE Act, but what are your thoughts on this? I read this and it all sounds really good. It's got a lot of bipartisan support, but I always get nervous as a hunter and outdoorsman. I always get nervous when the animal protection rights folks are lined up with you.
Yeah, we have to be careful. I'd have to look at that particular piece of legislation. If it's going to be an animal rights bill and it's going to restrict hunting or our ability to pursue fair chase of the game we like to hunt, then it will have no chance in Congress. There's enough people on both sides of the House and the Senate that will stop that. What we're trying to do is look for ways to enhance our ability as outdoorsmen and women to access the property that our tax dollars have paid for, our tax dollars maintain every year, and that's the public lands, whether that's state lands in the states, whether that's federal lands like Sumter National Forest down near where I live, or out west and in Montana, Wyoming, and all the western states that are full of federal property. Having access to that and being able to work within the game systems to pursue the animals, whether that's elk or whitetail here in South Carolina. But we will not get anything through Congress that restricts those rights.
And it looks like this particular piece of legislation, it's got a lot. I mean, one of the I guess attractive things about it is it proposes a lot of much-needed funding, especially for state agencies. But like I said, I always kind of worry about that when they're offering money and you don't know what you're going to have to give in return or give up in return.
Anytime the federal government's offering money, there's usually a string attached.
Amen.
And it's just like we talked about earlier with the Pittman-Robinson money. The bill that you mentioned would allow some of that money to come back to the states to help with hunter education and shooting training and other things. And John Frampton, the former director of DNR here, he and I disagree on some things, but we agree on this, and that is our money that we as shooters pay as part of the price of our ammo to allow some of that money to come back to educate the future hunters. We're dwindling in numbers of hunting license purchasers all around the country. And we need to get, especially in the inner cities, we need to get these kids exposed to firearms the right way, the correct way, the safe way. And then we need to expose kids of all ages to the outdoors. Take a kid hunting is not just a slogan. That's something we should do, something I've done with my three sons, and show them the safe, ethical way of a fair chase to pursue the animals we want. And the Pittman-Robertson money coming back would actually help the states to come into the schools and the classroom and start teaching some of that and doing some outside of the classroom programs as well.
Well said.
Yep, and it sounds like coming up, we got election coming up, so sounds like you got a lot of work cut out for you trying to. It sounds like education is the biggest thing. I mean, like you said, there's a lot of misinformation out there. But Congressman, we want you to know we support you here.
Absolutely.
Upstate Outdoors. You're welcome on the show anytime. If there's anything that we can help you with getting the word out to properly educate people, then we're here for you.
Well, I appreciate it. And, you know, I am up for re-election, but what it's all about today. Today's about, talking about the legislation that's coming through, an opportunity to encourage people to get out in the outdoors and take up the sport of hunting or sports shooting, get familiar with firearms, do it a safe way, get the education and training you need, but also always have that aspect of fair chase. I don't encourage poaching or illegal game in any way. I like the fair chase where that animal's got a chance to get away, and you as a hunter have to actually put forth skills and training and to get close to that animal enough to harvest it cleanly, and then utilize that resource for your benefit, because God gave us dominion over all the wildlife and the fish in the seas and the birds in the air. And we have a role in conservation. We have a role in all this. So I encourage folks to quiz their candidates, whether it's a governor candidate, a presidential candidate, or a congressional candidate, on how they feel about hunting and fishing and the shooting sports.
Amen.
Absolutely. Congressman Jeff Duncan, thanks for being on the show with
Absolutely.
Us. Absolutely. Anytime, and you folks get out there, and it's election season, and we need to keep the good guys in their seats.
God bless you, Congressman.
Thank you so much. God bless you, and we'll talk soon, okay?
All right. Happy hunting, brother. Good conversation.
There you go. A lot of legislation on the federal level, and he's one of the guys out there fighting a good fight.
Yes, he is.
We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up with the calendar of events and leave out with the parting shot.
Right here on Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD, the Upstate's talk station. Stay tuned.
Next on tap is the calendar of events. Take it away, Mr. Springer.
As discussed earlier in the show, this week, October 17th, Mr. Tom Mundy from Fish Stalker Lures will be having a free seminar at the Break on the Lake Grill and Bar. If for no other reason, that's why I would go. And dinner will be at 6 p.m., 7 p.m. The seminar will follow, as Tom discussed earlier. And make sure you bring your Lake Greenwood maps. He's going to help you out with some good stuff there. All right, coming up on the 25th of this month, a National Wild Turkey Federation Piedmont chapter will be having its Hunting Heritage Banquet, and that will be at the South Carolina National Guard Armory in Union, South Carolina. And for more information, please contact Steve Cobb at 563. All right. Also in November, while I'm looking for those notes, the the South Carolina Arms Association, as Congressman Duncan discussed, is having their gun and knife show this weekend at the TD Convention Center. Congressman Duncan is out there now, and also the show will open up again tomorrow. And please go by and feel free to shop and support your Second Amendment right. Coming up on November 10th and 11th, as discussed earlier, Fish Stalker Lures and Cabela's will be coming together with Tom Mundy, and he will be giving seminars on how to whack and stack that crappie. All right, and that will be the 10th and 11th, and man, it looks like he's going to be there both days, most of the day, starting at 10 a.m. all the way to 3 p.m. Seminar, questions and answers, luncheon, and just a good old hoedown. And coming up, as usual, every year we mention this, so I'm going to mention it the first time this week, at the Clinton House, December 15th, the Tower Shoot Pheasant Hunt. Make a difference for a child at Christmas. And it'll be two hunts and different prices for amount of birds and what you're going to be doing. And if you're interested, you can call our old buddy Oscar McCurry at 864-225-8704 or contact him at McCurrySouthboard@bellsouth.net or call Mike at the Clinton House and he'll hook you up.
That's also known as McCurry's Outboards. We do that every time you talk about him. Not Southboard. McCurry's Outboards.
Man, I got bad glasses. No, you tell me. That's an S right there. Look
it
at that.
Is at the end of McCurry's Outboards.
Okay. We do this every time, don't we?
No, you do.
Yeah, whatever.
All right.
God bless you.
Yeah. All right, let's jump into it.
Oh, good God.
Well, our parting shot today was on several different venues. For some reason, I pulled this from AJC.com. I have no idea what that stands for. AJC.com. A woman was kicked off of a Frontier flight earlier this week because of her emotional support squirrel. Easy for you to say. Orlando, Florida. Newsline, Orlando, Florida. A Frontier Airlines passenger at Florida's Orlando International Airport was removed from her flight by police Tuesday after she tried to bring her emotional support squirrel on board. The woman refused to get off the Cleveland-bound plane, so the crew called police. Man, if she's headed back up north, I think I'd let her go. Give me the squirrel. Just get hand over the squirrel, lady. Frontier Airlines officials said the woman noted in her reservation that she was bringing an emotional support animal, but she did not indicate it was a squirrel. Right? So I don't know, maybe they need to have a checkbox on there. What is your emotional support animal?
I bet you they do now.
Rodents, including squirrels, are not allowed on Frontier flights, officials said, which means you couldn't bring an emotional support beaver with you either.
Absolutely.
Because they are rodents also.
10-4.
The crew asked the woman to get off the plane, but she allegedly refused. Orlando police were called and asked everyone to deplane. All right, everybody, get off the plane so we can deal with nut job here. Then we'll let you back on. We're sorry you're going to be late, but
somebody bring the butter and garlic.
Yeah. Officials eventually escorted the passenger off the plane and brought her to the main terminal. And a video that's on AJC.com shows crowds cheering as she was taken off the plane.
Okay, so they were like, you know, oh, way to go, lady and your squirrel, basically? Or was the people cheering because they were glad to get the nut job off the plane? What do you think? That's a great question these days.
Actually, I think what it was she was bringing her emotional support squirrel back up to Cleveland to her emotional support moose. Hey, Rocky, want to see me pull a rabbit in my hat?
That old trick will never work. Oh, my God.
So, you know, she was basically just bringing the emotional support squirrel to the moose.
I mean, an emotional squirrel. I mean, dude, if I ever need an emotional anything.
How would you pick
please
a squirrel?
Please go ahead and shoot me.
How would you pick a squirrel? A squirrel is the most obnoxious and nervous animal there was.
Ever.
How are you going to be calmed down from a squirrel? Because the squirrel's like
90 to nothing.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah.
And when it was deplane, when they asked her to deplane the plane,
right,
she didn't know where to run. That way or that way or that way or that way. Go over here.
Exactly.
Go over there. Go over there. No.
People are nuts.
Yeah. I'll fake this way and then I'll go that way.
I don't know. I just still say I could have took care of it for her.
Yeah.
I'd have served it for her right as she walked off the plane.
Join us next week where the Roadkill Cafe will be emotional support squirrel and biscuits.
With garlic and butter.
With garlic and butter. So
hey, man, I guess they're some crazy folks.
If I
man.
Was going to, I mean, you know, a dog.
Yeah.
I get a dog for
comfort.
Well, I mean,
emotional support.
No, for you're blind.
Okay.
And you can't see.
Okay.
So the dog leads you.
Okay. I'm with you.
Emotional support should be a switch. You need a butt whooping.
Bingo.
Okay.
I like
you. You probably need a butt whooping somewhere. You know,
or somehow
have you know retroactive
support.
But an emotional support.
I don't get it.
Next time you're gonna take your squirrel up north, just drive.
Yeah, well,
just
please
rent a car.
It save a lot.
Put the squirrel in the back. Don't put him out front though.
No,
because he won't know which way to go.
Exactly.
They'll jump back and forth. I want to thank our guests today, Tom Mundy and U.S. Congressman Jeff Duncan, for being on the show. And that's the end of our show. Enjoy the fall. Springers, take us home.
As well as my good friend, Miss Pat.
That's right. I forgot her.
It's all good, man. It's all good. Hey, enjoy the weather. Love having you here every week. We'll talk to you next week. God bless. And may the spirit of wild always be with you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.